I will say that the wildest journey you'll ever go on is to get in touch with your unique gift, your unique essence, your unique medicine, and then start expressing it in the world. And in some very strange and fascinating and beautiful way, when we find that and we start sharing it, we are deeply connected with that same creative force that is the natural world.
Welcome to Woke and Wired, a new conversation about expanded consciousness and entrepreneurship. We are here to shift the paradigm of business and marketing and social media in this digital age of infinite possibility and bridge our inner technology, our intuition, with outer technology through rituals, personal development tools, conscious business practices, spiritual tools, and the magical tool of social media. I am your host, Ksenia, storyteller, conscious social media teacher, speaker, and a multidimensional traveler. Welcome to the new paradigm. Welcome back to Woke and Wired. I am your host, Ksenia, and this week my guest is Boyd Wardy. There's a lot of conversation about gratitude this week, and when the pandemic started, there was nothing I was more grateful for than Boyd's 40 Days and 40 Nights podcast journey, where he shared with us his 40 days and 40 nights in a treehouse in the wilderness in South Africa. And having this conversation with Boyd today and sharing it with you is the highest form of gratitude in action that I could share with you for sharing this path with me and tuning in. Whether you are here for the first time on Woke and Wired or you've been coming back, know that this episode is such a special treat, and get yourself a cup of something cozy, a latte, an elixir, a coffee, and maybe even if you can listen to this episode in nature so that you have the space to tune into your own wild nature inside. Boyd Wardy is a storyteller, life coach, and tracker, a wildlife and literacy activist, the author of two books, Cathedral of the Wild and Lion Tracker's Guide to Life. Boyd had an unconventional upbringing, born into a family of conservationists. He grew up on Londolozi Game Reserve in the South African wilderness. When Nelson Mandela was released after 27 years of imprisonment, he came to the reserve to recover. Since childhood, Boyd shared his home with lions, leopards, snakes, and elephants, and has spent his life in apprenticeship to the wisdom of nature. Boyd survived a harrowing black mamba encounter, a debilitating bout with malaria, and a vicious crocodile attack. But his biggest challenge, and something we touch upon in this conversation a lot, is connecting to your purpose. As a university student, he studied psychology and ecology, supplementing his education by learning martial arts in Thailand, hiking through the jungles of the Amazon, and apprenticing to a renowned tracker from the Shangun tribe. Boyd follows very unconventional pathways and has worked intensively over the past 7 years in ceremonial spaces as an apprentice to a Peruvian shaman. Boyd has such an interesting story, and there's so much more I could say. And instead, I'm going to let you experience his presence and his wisdom for yourself. And if you want to connect deeper with it, pick up his book, go to his website, and most of all, listen to 40 Days and 40 Nights. And stay on the lookout for an online course that he has coming out soon. Some of the things we discuss are being a creator in today's digital world, co-creating with nature and life itself. The second part of the famous Joseph Campbell quote about following your bliss that is not often talked about. Feeling alive in your body and following that expansiveness in your body as a compass towards your life purpose. Tuning into a different system of intelligence and the three steps that you can take right away to experience that for yourself. Why inner work has nothing to do with fixing yourself. We talk about Byron Katie's work and the tremendous impact it has had on Boyd, and how to access that deeper knowing that we all have access to through expressing and connecting to your own natural wisdom. I want to thank my friend Jasmine Jenkins from episode 125, Transforming Grief into Presence, for introducing me to Boyd and his work. And without further ado, here is Boyd Vardy. Boyd, I have so much to tell you, but at the same time, this podcast is about guest speaking and not the host. So my intention for this is to, for as many people as possible to experience your magic, because I've had the pleasure of experiencing it in person once, and then actually a lot more deeply through your podcast. When the pandemic hit, I couldn't count minutes for the next episode of 40 Days and 40 Nights to drop. And it really helped guide the direction of my inner world and, as a result, outer world through what this year has been. So there's just a lot to talk about, and we'll let the divine lead the conversation so that wherever is meant to be said will be said. Welcome to Woken Wired.
Oh, thank you. What a pleasure to be reconnecting with you. And I'm so pleased to hear that you enjoyed this incredible journey that I went on. It has, you know, I'm still integrating parts of it, and I'm still every day realizing how much I learned living out in that tree.
So for those who haven't listened to my recommendation to listen to your podcast, which I've spoken about multiple times on here, this is really an opportunity to go and revisit. And also, Boyd, will you just give us an idea of how that arose, what it was, and where you are now, post 40 days?
Sure. So for a very long time, I have been fascinated by the archetypal journey of the mystic into nature. And, you know, if you read the literature and you start to look into it, there are over 40,000 accounts of people who, you know, how would you describe it? Those who had a longing for the mystery, who at some point went to be alone in nature. And so that's been a very deep idea for me. And I've always wanted to explore it, but it's one of those things, you know, life, to get 40 consecutive days. And the reason that I wanted 40 days and 40 nights was there's a little bit of a biblical wink to it, although I'm not any way inclined religiously, but Jesus was meant to have gone to the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. And so it was something I always wanted to do. And the reason I wanted to do it is I wanted to have that experience from the inside. I wanted to ask myself the question, why did the mystics go to nature, and then go and answer it through pure experience? And of course, you know, life is busy, things keep coming up. And then suddenly it was 2020 and all of my work got canceled. And I was in the United States. I had to run back to my home in South Africa. I live in the wild eastern part of South Africa. And, you know, it was one of those things where this thing that I'd been thinking about for years, suddenly here was the space to do it. And, you know, then it was like, okay, you can have grand ideas about going and living alone in the wild for 40 days and 40 nights, but now here it is. And when you really think about that in modern life, like 40 days absolutely alone, no social media, no radio, no, you know, no email, no nothing, 40 days of absolute solitude, just you and nature. And there was, you know, a mixture of like excitement. There was a mixture of like, wow, you know, what's it going to be like? There's a bit of anxiety in there, but it was time. And I quickly started gathering my stuff.
Not just for you, Boyd, yeah. For listeners too. Every time I would wake up and I was like, what if there's no episode? What if you got eaten by a lion?
I know, right? And you know, Ksenia, it's funny, like when you actually start to think about it, you know, and this is some of what the thoughts that went through my head before, like when you're out in the wild, you wake up with the sun. So like 5 a.m., you're awake. And then, you know, I might make some coffee, do some stuff around the camp, go out into the bush for a while, go tracking, follow some animals, you know, get back to the camp, do a workout, go for a run, go bird watching for a while. And it's like 9:15 in the morning. And, you know, just the scope of time that opens up was just like phenomenal. And I just think like, okay, like what will my day be filled with? What will I do? And what was amazing about it is just before I left, a friend of mine said to me, Boyd, you need to stop thinking about what you will do. You need to be like an animal. You need to fall into a different rhythm. And it took a few days, and the ideas about what I have to be doing fell away. And I just got into this really beautiful, clear rhythm of being. And then there would be some task that arose or some encounter that happened that I would know to like pay attention to. And then I would fall back into this very still being. And then I would, you know, get up and do something. And it just took on its own rhythm. And for the listeners, you know, I was living in this huge, up in the branches of this huge, big ebony tree on the banks of a river. The property that I was on is one of the largest game reserves in South Africa. It's privately owned land that then connects to the Kruger National Park. And so you're in a wilderness area about the size of Israel. It's just a huge, about 14 million acres, lions, leopard, elephant, rhino, buffalo, crocodiles in the rivers, hippos, birds, over 300 bird species, you name it. And I lived up in the branches. And because I know the natural world well, I would go exploring every day. And I would say that, and then I'll stop talking. I would say that there were a few phases to it, Ksenia. The first was a kind of shedding. You know, I felt myself letting go of a lot of anxiety about all the things that I should be doing, all the things that I felt like were so important that I had to be involved in, you know, a kind of just a shedding. And the Aboriginal people say that modern life is 3 days deep. And when you've been in nature for 3 days, you just feel a whole shift in what's important to you. So there was a period of shedding at first, and I felt myself becoming calmer and stiller. And then there was a phase that I called attuning. And it was like my attention started to tune into the rhythm of the natural world, and I started to see differently. And I started to feel my body's circadian rhythm changing. I started to feel my senses enhancing. And I really feel like as you start to put your attention on living things, you start to become more alive. And then there was a period of simplification. You know, all of the complexity of modern life, it fell down into, it stripped away into daily simple rhythms and tasks. And I was so engaged in these tasks, everything from collecting firewood to tracking animals to building a shelter when the rain was coming to cooking my own food to just every one of these tasks was like tangible. And in washing my clothes in the river, I just felt so connected with life inside of that simplicity. And then the final phase was a kind of, it was really like I started to see the mystery. And that, and in the final phase, really what I started to realize is I was surrounded by this incredible natural intelligence, and I was watching it unfold. I was watching the way that everything was connected to everything. And I started to feel very intricately connected to that. That is actually what the deepest lesson that I came to is why the mystics went to nature. It was to experience themselves as a part of this incredible unfolding intelligence. And once you've known yourself inside of that, once you've felt yourself as a part of that, everything changes. And a very deep feeling of belonging and stillness comes into you.
I'm transported back to when I was listening to those episodes for the first time, some of them multiple times. I made my fiance listen to some of them with me in the car. And, you know, it's one thing to be speaking about the mystery, the divine, spiritual practices and tools, but why your podcast struck me so much and how you're speaking now, because this thing, this unnameable, is palpable. It's right there. And yeah, it's honestly, it's mind blowing, because we can spend lifetimes trying to find the right words, but it's really that energy behind the words that's fueling it that really touches people's hearts, those who are ready to receive.
Well, thank you. You know, and what's so strange about it is, you know, one of the mystics that I've always been inspired by was St. Francis of Assisi. And, you know, one of the amazing things about St. Francis is that he was a renunciate. He was born to a wealthy merchant family in the town of Assisi. And at a certain age, he felt such a deep longing in him for God and for nature that he literally walked into the town square and embarrassed his whole family by stripping all of his clothes off and walking out into the wilderness and taking a vow of poverty. And one of the strange things about St. Francis of Assisi is he was a man who took a vow of poverty, who is still to this day the number one economic driver of the entire Assisi region. Millions and millions of euros and dollars are spent in Assisi because people go there to pilgrimage to encounter what he represented years later, you know, hundreds of years later. And what was strange for me is that I went into solitude. You know, I felt this deep call to go and be alone. And then a second part of it was a creative part. Like I did feel that I wanted to share it. And so I started producing these episodes and dropping them off where someone could fetch them at the what we call the tree mail.
Hey, can we speak about the technology of it for a moment? Because on the one hand, you're totally out in the wilderness, you know, with monkeys stealing your coffee pot. And on the other hand, you were able to publish every day. So what was that balance between no outside world and some outside world as well?
Yeah, it was really strange. And it was strange. I was in solitude, but I was talking to more people than I had maybe ever spoken to, you know, as the podcast was beamed out every day. Yeah, I felt creatively, all I had was a little earphone, kind of like a sportscaster set and the recording device. It was super low tech in that respect. And every day I would just put it on. And if you listen to it, you know, every now and again, you hear a hippo honk in the background. And some days you hear the wind blowing and some days you hear like a bird calling right above. And I would just, each morning, I would just reflect a little bit and make a few notes. And then I would just get on the microphone and just share with people and then take this small memory card and walk it to a place down the river and drop it off. And that's where people would come and pick it up every day. And so it was really simple, but it was a beautiful feeling to feel. What it felt like to me is that I was picking up, as I got stiller and quieter, I could feel the natural world was transmitting energy. And that energy was going into me and becoming stories and becoming like an attempt to try and speak to what I was encountering. And it was traveling to people who were locked down all over the world. And I, to be honest with you, if the lockdown hadn't have happened, I don't think I would have done the podcast. But just before I went in, you know, maybe like a week before I went in, like the world really started locking down. And I knew that people were going to be isolated and were going to, and I saw this as an opportunity, like a kind of knowing came to me that I could share nature with them, you know, in their apartment in Madrid, or lockdown in New York, or, you know, there's a real sense that, like, because of where I live, I had an opportunity to be a voice for nature to people who were feeling very isolated. And so at first it was very much about me. When I first came up with the idea, it was very much about me. But then once that started to happen, I felt like, okay, this is actually about sharing with people and creating like a contact point for people.
Speaking of nature, Boyd, who's in the background? What kind of bird?
That is a bird called a red-chested cuckoo. And it's a really beautiful thing, Ksenia, because they are migratory birds and they arrive back just after the rains. They migrate up to Central Africa and then they arrive in South Africa just after the rains here in late November, early December. But literally, like, they arrive overnight. So one morning you wake up and they're calling and they're back. And it's this wonderful feeling of this like inter-African traveler who's come back to visit you.
That's incredible. I know I got you off track there with Assisi, but I had one more question about the process of creating those podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Content creation is something that is part of any modern business, whether that's social media or podcasts or YouTube videos. And it's a topic that I often explore and with my clients, with my listeners, with myself. And what I'm curious in your experience, you know, you said that you would just turn on your mic in the morning and you would transmit those stories from the natural world. When you would sit down, did you know what you were going to say? Or do you just get in a certain state and allow it to take over? What is the process there?
Well, for me, what I do is I have a notebook and I start to, as I go through the day, like any things that come to me or things that touch me or things that I notice, I would write down. And I would just like one simple note, you know, like beautiful encounter with red-chested cuckoo. A list of animals that had come to the river to drink, run out of firewood, you know, just little notes like that. But what I find when I start to make notes as a writer and as a storyteller, it's almost like I start opening the channel to that, you know, that higher storyteller, that muse, that divine, that spirit intelligence. And so I start to, it starts to come out on the page in tiny little notes. And then once it's time for me to produce the episode, I really just read over the last day's notes, and then I just let it come as it wants to come from there. But it really felt to me like it felt like the things from my past, you know, if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear like there's things that are happening in the day. There's little stories, and then there's things from the past, and then there's little memories, and then there's little things that I've learned and that are, But it's just coming in the moment. And so it's a bit of past, it's a bit of future, it's a bit of things I've read, and it all just seems to, like, I feel like it knows how to tell the story, and I just need to let it tell the story. And it will be given to me if I just let it tell the story. And I did have a few days, you know, where, like, you know, you can imagine you're on day 5 and you have 35, you know, days to go, which means 35 episodes. And you know, anyone who creates content can be daunted by that. Like, in the next 35 days, I have to get out 35 episodes. And so there was a little bit of, like, small boyed fear. But then every time I would sit down, I would open the notebook and the story would come, the story of the day would come. So I felt very, and actually, you know, before I went in, there were quite a few people, and, you know, people from my community who have various practices, who were like, do not do a podcast, that will ruin the retreat. And I think, as a purist, yes, you know, if you were like really doing a retreat, it's probably best not to have any outside influence. But for me as an artist, I wanted to be in the creative process with it. And so I knew it wasn't like a strict retreat. It was a creative retreat too. And it turned out to be one of the best things I did, because every day showing up, sitting down, going into my notebook, I felt that wonderful thing that happens when a writer or a content creator starts to develop that daily discipline. Like, you just start to feel it being given to you. You're not doing it. It's being given to you by some wonderful creative force. And that, to me, felt like a very magical communion with spirit.
I hear you. I feel like when we don't create that outer structure, it's so easy for it to slip away. And, you know, what I want to point out is there were people telling you that doing podcasting or, you know, writing would take you away from the experience. And like for this, like for anything else, there just is not one blueprint and one rule. And it's just coming back to our own inner experience and what feels right for us and our intentions. So you mentioned one of your intentions was making this a creative retreat. And it's this beautiful and powerful balance between openness and going with the flow of nature, and at the same time having this sort of discipline.
I mean, I think you've said it so well there. I mean, I started getting one, because I started talking to people about it, and everyone had a different opinion, and everyone, you know, there were, I spoke to Zen teachers who had 30 years of Zen practice, who told me, this is how you have to do it. I spoke to other people who said, you know, one of the art forms is to give over how you think you should do it, so that the retreat itself can show you what it wants to be. So I had all of these different voices, but in the end, I realized, you know, I'm creating this experience for myself. And so I must listen to those who have wisdom, and I must trust that something in me knows how to do this. And then, I think you're so right about that. The way you've said that is really well captured. And then what I started to think of is something that a friend of mine, Josh Waitzkin, always talks about. He's an expert on learning, and he describes it as creating form to leave form. So you give yourself enough structure, and then somehow if you give yourself enough structure, it gives you the space to leave the structure and really surf and really, like, flow with it. But something about having enough discipline is the doorway into being really free. And that's been my experience, like, knowing that I have to show up, knowing that by like 10, 11 in the morning, I want to be sitting down and focusing on the episode. I'm going to give myself an hour to write every day or whatever it is. But I know that just a little bit of discipline is actually the doorway into more freedom.
Thank you for answering questions that I ask in my head, but haven't said out loud, haven't formulated.
I love it when that happens.
You know, I think one of the other interesting aspects of what happened in your experience is that you didn't have outside reactions to your podcast, outside of some little notes that I think you've received, maybe even one from me, I'm not sure. But it's such a, what's a safe for work word? It can be such a block to allow ourselves to take in feedback and let that lead our creative self-expression, especially with digital world, with social media. You know, I think especially with younger generations, but not only, there's just this programming to expect feedback right away. And if it's not there, we start doubting our relevance, our quality of work, everything. What's your experience with that?
I mean, I think that one of the most amazing things about it was, like, I didn't have feedback. I think you're right about that. And it seems to me that anyone who gets far enough down the road realizes that if you're going to let, you know, the open platforms like be the place where you draw your sense of what the quality of your work is, you're mostly going to get hurt as an artist. It seems to me that most of the artists I know have a trusted group of people who help them, you know, evolve, help them grow, help them shift their work. So I think it's definitely one of the biggest challenges of being a creator in these times, like, and on these different platforms. Personally, I feel like I've reached a point now where I can listen back to something, I can read over something, and I can really know whether I'm writing from a place of truth and whether something that feels really authentic is coming out of me. And I've gotten good at being my own judge of that. I've certainly been guilty of at times trying too hard, trying to create stuff that I feel will be relevant. But I sort of know how I feel when I go over that work again. I've gotten to a place where I've like attuned enough to feel like, oh, I'm trying too hard there. That's not quite right. And so now I just trust that I do the authentic voice, I put it out, and then I move on. You know, I try and move on. I do not dwell on reviews and write-ups and read-ups and all that stuff. I just put my work out into the world and I move forward. I've done my 50%, you know, and then it's up to what people do with it, where they take it. That's their 50%. But I just show up for my half of getting it out.
Right. It's between you and the divine, not between you and whoever's meant to receive it, because we can't control that one.
Yeah. And I think that as a developing that trusted group of advisors, you know, people who can say to you, because you need that as an artist. You know, I'm not saying like just trust your own work and put it out there, because we all need to grow. So, you know, I've been very lucky to have some great mentors and friends in that space who have said like, you know, there's a strong idea in here, but it's not developed enough yet. I don't feel like this is strong enough yet. I don't, you know, so it's not being defensive. It's being really open, but with the right people and people who you feel safe with and people who you trust.
Okay, I'm pulling up my Boyd note on my phone here, and I've highlighted a couple of things I wanted to bring up. So one of them is you have spoken about making up a different way of living. And when you do that, the result is originality. And you've also said that living differently is the activism of today. And with that, I also want to bring up, you know, you've spoken about not listening to outside voices when you were deciding how this creative retreat would go. And not only you have done that, but other people in your family have taken a big stand for what they believe in. When I was reading Cathedral of the Wild, one thing that really struck me that I've really carried with me is when your father and uncle started the reserve and how much backlash there was and how that didn't stop them from pursuing their vision of regenerating land and bringing animals and creating the space for people to connect with nature and themselves. So can you just speak a little bit about that as we spoke about where Assisi comes from? Let's hear a little bit about where Boyd comes from.
Sure. So, you know, I grew up on a piece of land in the wild eastern part of South Africa. It was a piece of land that my great-grandfather bought in 1926. And he bought it at that time for two reasons. One, he was drinking gin and tonic on the day that he heard about these properties that were for sale. And these farms were bankrupt cattle farms that lay east of the Kruger National Park. And one of the reasons that the farms were bankrupt was because lions had been eating all of the cattle. And my grandfather was a hunter, and he bought, in 1926, he bought this property. And for three generations, my family came here to hunt, and they came here particularly to hunt lions. And then in 1969, my grandfather died, and my father and uncle, who were 15 and 17, were left with the property. And all of the family advisors said to them, you know, you've got to get rid of that place. It's out in the middle of nowhere. There's lions there. Lions will bite you. It's just a bad idea. And something very deep inside of them knew that this was the place that was most special to them. And they said, we're going to keep it. And all the family advisors said, it's going to drain you of all your money and your mother's already a widow. And, you know, and they said, well, we'll make it pay. And that's how my family got into the safari business. But what was amazing about it, Ksenia, is that my father and uncle met this man called Ken Tinley, and they went through a kind of an awakening experience. And Ken said to them, if you want this place to work, you need to do away with hunting. You need to partner with the land. You need to start to restore it. And you need to think of the animals as your kin. And you need to bring the local people in so that you all work together. And they said, well, how do we restore the land? And Ken was this incredible ecologist. And he started to show them how to clear away the scrub and take away the thorn where the cattle had overgrazed the land. Thick scrub had come up. Showed them how to clear it and how to restore the micro catchments. And as they did that, the grassland started to return and the animals started to return. And so to your original question, where does Boyd come from? From the time I was very young, what I grew up inside of is I watched the landscape being restored. I would, as a young boy, I would see, you know, a couple of hundreds of acres of scrub, no animals, just this thick thorn. And then they would clear it and they would go and repair where they were losing the moisture in these deep erosion furrows. And I would go back there a year later and I would see a herd of impala grazing and a rhino feeding in this beautiful open grassland. And that went into my head in very deep ways. And it was like I saw the possibility of what can happen when we work with nature. And I saw the power of healing. And I saw how nature's nature, when we connect with her, when we work with her, is just to regenerate. And so everything in my life has been centered around that idea that there is a powerful force in the world, and there is a powerful force born of nature that wants to heal, that is naturally abundant, that wants to be unique, that wants to express itself in new ways. And so all of my work is about helping at every level, about healing our relationship with nature, helping people heal themselves and what they've been through, creating ecosystems where healing and where rejuvenation and restoration can take place. So, and then to tie that back to some of the quotes you were saying, you know, I believe that inside each one of us is a wild part of us, Ksenia, that knows what our purpose and mission is. It knows why we're here. And inside of that wild part of us is a kind of unique, essential gift that we have to bring to the world. And what I find is that people who do the work of trying to go under the layers of all the social programming, all the conditioning, and start to tap into that place, they start to naturally express that gift. They start to do things differently. They start to follow a different path. They start to want to serve. They start to return to nature. They start to want to live more simply. They stop wanting things. They stop consuming at high levels, because they're in touch with something much deeper. And so what I would say is that all of the work that I serve is to help people get in touch with that place. Because people who touch that start living differently. They start wanting different things. They start creating different ways of being. And then they start to show other people that that's possible. I mean, let's look at your career, for example, and the influence that you have and the impact that you have and the message that you put into the world. You know, what you have created, you couldn't go to university to study how to get your job. You know, you've found a whole lot of things that you're interested in. You found passions. You found what you're drawn to. You followed your curiosity. You've been willing to put, you know, all of these different interests together and to create something unique. And so that's what I mean. That's what I mean by following those essential gifts. There's no roadmap for it. And that's why I call it inner tracking. You're stringing together like a series of clues. You're starting to follow something that really a part of you knows, but there's no roadmap to it. There's no plan to it. You're moving on a feeling, and it's very innovative work and it's very difficult work. You know, that old Joseph Campbell quote of follow your bliss. It's so well quoted, but what a lot of people don't realize is that there was a second part to that. When Campbell said it, he said, follow your bliss. You may not be respected in your life, but it will be your own life. And I think it's very important to put up that second part, you know, because what he meant was, if you follow this path, follow this living on the feeling, following your bliss, following your essential gift, when he says you won't be respected, what he means is that very often society, culture, people won't understand what you're doing. They won't really know what you're doing. And there may be years where you don't know what you're doing, but you will be on your own authentic path. And usually I find that really comes together. But there are times on that journey where it's difficult because There's no roadmap. There's no one to tell you this is how you do it. Everyone's looking at you saying, what are you doing? But you follow it and it starts to take you to a deeper place. Does that make sense?
Definitely. Not just everyone, but I sometimes look at myself and I'm like, what am I doing? But I love that you brought in that Joseph Campbell quote, and that, you know, leads me to another principle that you have shared multiple times that really stuck with me and that I bring in when I am not sure what I'm doing, which is focus on what life is asking of you versus what you think you should be doing. So can you speak a little bit more to that one? Because I feel that if there's just one thing that everyone follows, this is it.
Well, I mean, that runs infinitely deep, right? Because what starts to happen in that space is, okay, let's say it like this. There are all of these things that you should do, right? There are all of these things that you should do. You tell yourself, I should really be doing this. You know, this is what would make me successful. This is how other people got successful. This is the playbook. And then there's something deeper. You know, it's like when you start to ask yourself, okay, let's give up all of the things that I should do to be successful that it seems like other people do. And I really sit with what is being asked of me. And how do I know how to answer that question? Well, in my experience, when it comes to the divine, you know, one of the ways we know what is being asked of us is that it is both exciting and scary, but it makes us feel more alive. When we know, when you start to touch that place where it's like, if I do this, I'm scared to do this. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know where it's going. I don't know if it'll take me anywhere. But when I do this, I feel truly alive. I feel myself stretched and expanded, but I feel an energy in me of like expansive aliveness, joy mixed in with like the dauntingness of fear. But underneath all of that, I just feel more life. I think that's how we know what life is asking of us, because life always wants more life. It wants to make more of itself. And so you can start asking yourself like, okay, if I want to know what life is asking on me, then ask yourself what expands you, what makes you feel alive, what makes you feel joyful. And that's not to say that this is going to be like a picnic. You know, I'm just going to do what feels joyful, because it will scare you to really follow that. And it will start to take you into totally unknown terrain to follow that. And you will not know sometimes what the next step is. But if you keep stepping towards that feeling, it is going to start taking you towards a purpose that you couldn't rationally conceive of. You know, that you couldn't say, well, then I'll do this, and then that'll be the right move for me at that phase of my life, and then this will be the right move for me. It's not going to take you that way. It's taking you to a much rawer, more authentic place. And it takes courage to follow that. And that's what I always say to people. This whole, like, I'm going to follow my bliss thing, this whole, I'm going to find my authentic life, you know, I'm going to live my best life or whatever. If you really go for it, it is not for the faint-hearted. You have to let go of all the structure that modern life provides you. And you have to follow a wild, alive knowing inside of you. And that will scare you. And it's work for the brave. It's for the courageous. But it will take you, it takes time, but it starts to take you into pure originality. Because what your life starts to be is that expression of something very unique and essential inside of you. But I guess I guess as someone who has lived it for the last 37 years, I have, you know, maybe when I was younger, I would say, just follow it. It'll take you to the right place. But now I know it takes courage to do that. You know, living without structure and following the feeling of life, that takes a lot of courage. And I think it needs to be acknowledged.
Definitely. And what I would love to touch on is, how does one connect with that courage? In your experience, perhaps tools or teachers or practices, what has been impactful and expansive and empowering on your own journey to access that? And also, how much of this work is, oh, I mean, not even work, exploration is the word I want to use. How much of it is clearing out the brush, and how much of it is stepping out of the way to create the space for animals to come back in our inner world?
So that's a good way of saying it. Well, you know, the strange, there's always if you start doing inner work, there's always kind of the big joke of it. Is you have to do your work. You have to do your work. You have to work out what patterns you have. You have to realize, you know, how you let yourself down. You have to realize what voices are inside of you, where you overcriticize yourself. You have to realize where you don't show up. You have to do your work. But it's a really strange thing. Once you've really done it, what you start to realize is that there was nothing to fix. You know, it's again, I guess we're talking about form to leave form. There was nothing to fix. There was nothing wrong with you in the first place. Because I think a lot of people set off on this journey thinking like, I want to be better. But actually what inner work does is it takes you back to yourself to let go of the need to be better and just to be you. And to realize that just accepting yourself, letting yourself be you is the thing that you've actually always been looking for. But it's a dance. It's a dance, Ksenia, because we do have to do work on that journey. So I'm not sure I'm saying that well, but one of the things that is going to happen is when you set off to really become your wild self, when you set off on that journey, one of the first things that will happen is you will start. The first thing that I would say is you have to tune into a different system of intelligence. And one of the ways to do that is to start noticing what happens in your body rather than living up in your head. So you might ask yourself, who are the people that make my body feel more alive? When I'm with them, my energy actually feels expanded. What are the activities that when I'm doing them, I forget about time and I feel energized? I feel like I don't need to sleep. I don't need to eat. I don't need to drink. Who are the people who, when I'm with them and I leave them, I feel inspired and energized, not up in my head, down in my body. So I would say start to tune into your body and read the wilderness of your body. Your body is a wild landscape. So notice what energizes you and notice what shrinks and constricts you. That's going to take you a long way to starting to show you who and what is very essential to you. The second thing that I would say is be curious. You know, your curiosity is going to guide you to things that are very essentially a part of you. No one is curious about things that don't grab a place inside of them that is very deep. So let your curiosity guide you. And as that starts to happen, it's going to pull you towards things. And you're going to start to notice like, okay, it's these people, it's these activities. These things are the things that feel most essential to me. At that point, your mind is going to come in with a whole lot of reasons why you can't just follow those things. And that is so, but that is where our limiting beliefs come in. And so a lot of inner work is about identifying the beliefs we have about ourselves that have become limitations. You know, if I leave this job, I won't have any money. Okay, that might be true, but it might be that that job is also the limitation to how much money you could make. If I leave this relationship, I'll be alone. It might be true, but it could also be that if you leave that relationship, you'll finally open yourself to the community that you've been looking for. So we have to start to identify and question those limiting beliefs. And that becomes very, very important work. And I would say that the work of Byron Katie, for example, has been absolutely life-changing for me. And all it is you identify a thought that is causing you stress and fear, and you question that thought using her system, which is four questions and a turnaround. And just you do it as meditation, but it allows you to question your own thoughts. And that's been very powerful for me. I would say of all of the work I've done, Byron Katie's work is some that has unlocked me the deepest. Just questioning fearful, limiting beliefs. And amazingly, as you start to question those beliefs, those limiting thoughts, you don't let them go. They let you go. As you really question them and meditate in, is this thought really true? It starts to let you go, and you start to be more in tune, less with a rational plan and more in tune with a kind of deeper knowing. And that is the place that I think we're actually looking for, where you're just living, knowing what to do next, knowing what to do next. You don't need the whole plan. You just know this is the next thing I have to do. You know, like when you reached out to make this podcast, you know, it's just, okay, I know that I'm going to reach out. That's the next thing to do. And here we are. So, and then in that way, life starts to unfold itself out of that very simple knowing place inside of us. And we become less laden with, you know, strategies and plans and growth strategies and all these, you know, success strategies and goals. And we just, that stuff falls away into a very clear mind that just knows what to do next, who to reach out to, where to connect, you know, what my next moves are.
And By the way, just to be real here, I reached out a couple of times. And I think part of what you're saying also involves trusting the divine timing. You know, it's very clear to me why this interview is happening now and not a year ago whenever we spoke first.
Right. So, but here's the thing about you that I, you know, so admire about you. And I think it's important as someone, because to me, you know, Ksenia, you are like, you're one of the people I'm talking about. I believe that the modern day activism is to make a different life up for yourself, to create a different way of being in the world. And that's exactly what you've done. And you reached out a couple of times and it didn't line up. And you kept reaching out because you know, as a creator, as an artist, that, you know, sometimes you have to do your part and not get the answer, but that doesn't stop you doing your part, which is continuing to reach out. And then when the time is right, it lines up. And I just think that's in this, I guess what I'm just really trying to impress upon people is that this work is important. Finding out who you truly are and living your authentic life, it's important because people who find that start to, just by living, they don't try and sell anyone anything. They just by living, they start to inspire other people. But it does take a kind of, it takes discipline. It doesn't just happen. You have to trust. You have to keep at your path. You have to tune into your body. You have to listen. You have to question those limiting beliefs. It's not like you just arrive there. It's a discipline. You keep living like that. And then life starts to meet you in different ways.
I receive your kind words. Thank you so much for seeing that. And what I want to take this conversation to is twofolded. One side is, what were some of the limiting beliefs that you have addressed to step on your own track, especially in your career? Well, everything is interconnected. And second one is this fine balance between co-creating with the flow of life, giving in to the swirl of life, and also, you know, having some strategy, some even minimal strategy, because when you are a creator, when you write books, you have an online course coming out, there are some things that need to be done, like sending out emails and letting people know that your work is available. And I find that there is no blueprint for this, and it's different for everyone. But just hearing stories of people like you who co-create with the flow of life in this new way is just so helpful and expansive.
Well, I mean, I think those two questions really touch each other. And okay, limiting beliefs. I wonder which one to start on. Which one should I start on? Should I start on the first one or the second one? Or how do you?
Second one.
Okay. Well, a few things for me. The first was that I have had a massive structure with being grounded. And literally, you know, my life was full of a lot of travel. I was literally in the sky a lot. But at a certain point, I was very lucky to have a teacher, to actually have two teachers. But at a certain point, one of my teachers actually said to me, you know, you're too ungrounded to create what you want to create. And I was really busy at that time, but I was not working to any kind of structure or real roadmap. It was just like whatever was coming. And so I had to ask myself, okay, what is the area, like, what does it mean to be grounded? It requires a certain kind of discipline. It means that you're working to some structure. It means that things are not haphazard. There's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end. And so like for a couple of months, I sat in like what it would actually mean to be grounded and what I needed to do to be grounded. And one of the first things for me was to realize that I was bad at it and I needed people around me who were good at it to show me how it works. And so it was a humbling experience because I had to go to people and say, you know, there are so many, I don't know how to build the structure I need and I need help. I don't know how to structure things like properly, beginning, middle, and end. I don't know how to create a vision and then work to that vision. And so, you know, strangely, my father became a big supporter. My mentors became big supporters. And I had one or two friends who really stepped in and taught me how to build structure. So that was a big learning curve for me. But so you got to ask yourself, you know, if you're listening to this, okay, what is my area of weakness? So if I looked at it like, where are things not happening? Why aren't they happening? I'm missing deadlines. I don't know how to start. That's a big one for people. I don't know how to get it out there. I don't know how to distribute. I don't know. So find, like, ask yourself, where is it not working? And then next question, what would it look like if it was working? And who do I know who's good at the thing that I'm not good at? And can I ask them to help me? So that was, you know, that's an area. So I had to learn to build structures. I had to learn to work to structure. I had to work to be disciplined and to show up consistently in my own work. And that took about a year of being aware that this is an area that I'm bad at and I've got to keep showing up to it, asking for help. And then it started to integrate. And of course, once you have, the thing about structure is often once you have built the foundation, it's quite easy to plug into it. And actually, the thing about a structure is that it gives you structure. So I had to build a few things that then once they were there, I realized how easy they were to actually maintain. So that's been a big learning curve for me as someone who has struggled to be grounded. Limiting beliefs. Oh, multiple. Do you think that answers the question, Ksenia? Does that take you there?
Yes, I am also to take it one notch deeper, particularly with the online world and social media, you know, finding your beginning, middle, and end there as someone who is so connected to nature. And, you know, like normally I would ask, what is your relationship with social media? But this time I'm called to ask, what is the new vision for social media that you see for the world? Because clearly it's not going away, but we do have the opportunity to shape, at least on an individual level to start with, what it can be in people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, I think one of the ways of saying it is that for me, it's a place to give, not to get. You know, it's a place where I can share rather than trying to get attention. And so that has seemed central. You know, I have loved sharing stuff that is meaningful to me and that is valuable to me. And then I share it and I don't really tune in too much to what the response of it has been. And I thought that was one of the great things about the podcast format too, is that, you know, it's an opportunity to broadcast a frequency. And I do it largely for myself. I don't need to know where it's going to go, you know, where it's going. I'm not lost in, are we building the right numbers? I just know that that's a way I like to put a voice for nature into the world. So I think it's a tool. I think that it is, there's opportunities in it. But I mean, I'll give you one quite practical example. I don't have Instagram on my phone. And even just that is a wonderful thing. If I really want to post something, you know, I can take a picture of it and I can post it when I'm sitting at my computer. Just a little tweak like that has been like really powerful. And I know, you know, many people would say you have to be in the moment, etc. But for me, I want to be thoughtful about what I share. I don't need to share every moment. And that's just like changes my relationship with it immediately. But I'm probably getting off track.
No, you're actually very on track because you're speaking to social media being an opportunity to broadcast your frequency and give. And I think just even that reframe changes so much because if you Google, you know, anything about social media, what it will give you is tips and tools and strategies of how to grow, how to make money, how to get followers. Well, what if we remove the get part and focus on the give just as an experiment? You know, for a week, I'm going to take this on and I'm going to invite everyone listening to take this on just for a week. What if all you do when you show up online is give? That sounds exciting.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I guess I share what I want to put out is things that I feel artistically genuinely connected to. And that's another place where I, you know, like if I'm going to put out a podcast, it's like, I want to feel like this is a piece of creation that I was really proud to put into the world. I'm not just, you know, in that place of like, it's a hungry bird. We've got to keep getting content out there. It's like, I want to make sure that it's something that I still feel connected to. Limiting beliefs, you know, to segue into the limiting beliefs I've had. The wonderful thing about the mind is that it will keep throwing out limiting beliefs at you. And, you know, you name it, I've had them. But when I have a limiting belief, you know, things aren't moving fast, things aren't growing fast enough. The first thing I do is I write it down, things aren't growing fast enough. And then I ask myself, is it true? And I sit in meditation. And I wait for the answer. Is it true that things aren't growing fast enough? And then I write down, and this is from Katie's work, what happens? How do I react when I believe the thought? And I write. I'm anxious. I get down on myself. I start to criticize myself. I start to lash out at the people on my team that things aren't moving fast enough. I feel like I don't have enough. I find this place inside of me where it's never enough. I start to feel like the world needs to move faster to make me happier. I judge myself for not doing enough. I don't rest. And I just watch who I am when I'm believing that thought. I watch it. I don't judge it. I just notice how I show up in the world when I'm really believing that thought. Then I write, the next question is, who would I be without the thought? Things aren't growing fast enough. Who would I be without the thought? I would be calm. I would be peaceful. I would be moving things forward with clarity. I wouldn't be judging myself all the time. And so there'd probably be more space for creativity. I wouldn't be criticizing. I would be having more faith in the speed at which spirit wants things to happen rather than the speed at which Boyd wants things to happen. I would be in a more open, relaxed state. I would be in a more creative state. Things would probably start to move faster, you know? And then the final question is, the final thing she advises you to do is you turn it around. Things are moving fast enough. And then I sit in that. Things, you know, why are things moving fast enough? Because they're always going to go at their own pace, because you can't, you know, you push a whole lot of things and nothing happens and then one thing opens up. So I just sit in those questions. And what happens is when you sit in those questions and you watch the mind like that, the mind starts to rest into itself. It's not like saying, stop thinking that thought. Instead, I've invited that thought in and I've got to know it. And I've got to know how that thought drives me. And I've loved that thought actually as I've sat and got to know it. And then that thought lets me go. Obviously, it's never helpful just to say, stop thinking that, because the mind has its own way. But somehow when we invite a thought in and we actually take time to sit with it, it really moves the dials. And yeah, I think you would really like some of her work. I think you would get a lot out of it.
You know, every time I hear about it or I've experienced it at retreats and events or podcasts, I make a note of how powerful it is. And I've moved a lot of my own blocks through it, but then I forget. So thank you for bringing it back. It's perfectly timed. I know we're at time. I have another question. Do you have a few minutes?
Sure.
So as someone who lives between wilderness and also travels around the world sharing your work, what does connecting with nature look like to you when you are not in the wilderness? And perhaps what would you recommend to someone who's listening to this and is wondering, okay, but what might that connecting to nature look like for me? What do I do? What's the practical step?
Oh, that's such a great question. Well, you know, I will say that the wildest journey you'll ever go on is to get in touch with your unique gift, your unique essence, your unique medicine, and then start expressing it in the world. And in some very strange and fascinating and beautiful way, when we find that and we start sharing it, we are deeply connected with that same creative force that is the natural world. And so when I'm traveling, when I'm on the road and I'm, you know, I'm in New York and I'm in LA and I'm in San Francisco and I'm in London and I'm in a big urban city, but I know that I'm connected with that creative force because I'm doing the work I'm meant to be doing. And I feel deeply connected with that. And I feel like I'm involved in the restorative power of nature, because wherever I go, we're telling stories of healing and we're gathering in healing and we're creating more connection, which is the natural way of the world. So for me, in a strange way, Ksenia, being engaged in my truest nature of my work is a way to be in tune with nature. So that's one way. And then the other thing that I do is that, you know, when we've gathered in this way, when people come together and heal together, there's a beautiful, powerful, natural force that comes into the room. And it's an ancient, I think of healing energy as one of nature's oldest energies, you know? And when that comes in the room, when we're really with each other without pretense, when we're not all trying to pretend, when everyone actually just drops and the healing work starts and people start to let go of all the standards of society that they've held themselves to, something so beautiful happens. And I know that beauty to be wild and mysterious, and it looks exactly to me when people heal together, it looks exactly to me like the harmony that I see in the natural world. And so I follow that. And what I would say to anyone who wants to live a wild life is find your gifts and share them, and you will be deeply in tune with something natural.
Mic drop.
It's so nice to talk to you.
It was wonderful, Boyd. Before we wrap up, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you feel called to share?
Well, the one thing is that in the next couple of weeks, I'll reach out to you again. We're going to launch, it's an introduction to what I call tracking your life. And I'm really excited about it because it's just a way for people to go inward and start the process of identifying, simplifying, and stilling themselves and getting more in tune with that place. So I'm really excited to share that with people, and I'll let you know when that's coming out. And I hope that people will get a lot out of it as they begin this journey.
And in the meantime, what would you say are the best ways to connect with your work?
The best ways are on boydvarty.com. I've written two books, which you can get there. The first is called Cathedral of the Wild, and the second is called The Lion Tracker's Guide to Life. So both of them, you know, explore these dimensions of connection. Now another bird is calling. That's a purple-crested lurie. And then, so through the book and then through the podcast, which you can get on all of the channels, which is the Track Your Life podcast with Boyd Vartey. And there's going to be some, probably a new, early next year, I'm going to do another adventure, which I'll be sharing with people probably around February of next year too.
Ooh, is it something that others can join you on, or is that going to be solo?
It's going to be solo, and it's just forming at the moment. So I'll reach out and tell you more once I know exactly what it's going to look like.
Definitely. What's on my vision board with my friend Jasmine, who introduced us, and our friend Hillary, is to actually visit Londolozi. So I hold that vision that I'll be hearing those birds in person one day, experiencing the magic of everything.
I know it to be true. I know it to be true. It'll be amazing to have the three of you out here and share this place with you.
Thank you so much, Boyd. Have a wonderful evening. And thank you so much for modeling, sharing your medicine with the world.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really, it's lovely to connect again.
If you enjoyed the show, please leave a rating and a review on iTunes and share it with a friend who you think could benefit from the message. Find all the show notes and all the resources on wokeandwired.com, and say hello on Instagram. Find me at Woke and Wired. Stay woke, stay wired, and take 3 deep breaths right now.